just tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's yesteryear. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. Mystery in this hour. Later on, we hear Dick Powell as Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. But right now, it's the first broadcast of the Mystery House series, a short-lived show, only on Mutual for a couple of years and in syndication. This episode from August 19th, 1945, called A New Lease on Death.
Mystery House. Mystery House, that strange publishing firm owned by Dan and Barbara Glenn, where every new novel is acted out by the Mystery House staff before it is accepted for publication. Mystery House. A New Lease on Death. You know, I like that title, Barbie.
You'll like the story we're doing tonight, too, Dan. Once in a while, some author sends in the manuscript of a book that's really different. And this is one.
Well, fine. You know, that's one trouble with stories. So many writers turn out yarns that are just like all the rest of the stories they've ever written.
Well, that's one thing you can't say about me, Mr. Glenn.
Oh? Well, I didn't know you wrote stories, Guy.
Well, I don't write stories. What I write is the absolute truth.
Well, let's get on with tonight's story, huh? Places, everybody. Set the scene, Guy.
The scene is a street in a rather undesirable part of town. A well-dressed couple is stopped by a seedy-looking character who is obviously after a handout.
Pardon me, bud. I suppose you could stick a guy to a sandwich and a cup of coffee?
You sure it's for a sandwich?
Oh, Larry, don't give the poor bum a lecture. Give him a quarter. Larry.
Hmm? What?
I believe it. Larry. Oh, stop him. He's running away. Get him. Bring him back quick.
Hey, you, come back here. Hold on.
Let go of me. Let go, I tell you. You haven't got any right to stop me. I can go where I please without...
Wait, Scott. Miriam knew what she was talking about.
All right. I made a mistake. If I'd have seen you, I wouldn't have stopped you. Now go on, leave
me
alone.
Can't stop. I wouldn't have known you if...
Well, there's no reason why you should know me, is there, Larry? Everybody was pretty happy to forget me, I guess.
Ken Starr, what in the world happened to you? Well, you look like a ghost.
Yeah? Well, maybe I am. You wouldn't look so good yourself, Miriam. You've been through what I've taken.
Oh, you poor thing.
Oh, I'm not asking for sympathy, Miriam. I can just see you at the country club. Girls, you'd never guess who I saw panhandling on the street last night. Ken Starr. And he looked like a bum.
You've no right to talk that way.
After all, you didn't give anybody a chance to help you, Ken.
You mean I didn't get out on my knees and beg my friends for help?
Ken, it's not too late yet. You can't throw your whole life away.
I've already thrown my life away, Miriam. Once you die, you never get a chance to come back to life.
You're being a little melodramatic, aren't you, Ken?
No, I'm quite serious, Larry. I died during my murder trial when they brought out the story of Elsa Gaynor and me.
But you weren't convicted. They set you free.
I was dead as far as Elsa Gaynor was concerned. Reasons were good enough. I was dead in business. People don't trust their financial affairs to a man who's been tried for murder.
But I wish we'd seen you before, Ken. It's so tragic to think of you and how successful you were and...
And how singularly unsuccessful I am now? It isn't so tragic, Miriam. Actually, I don't feel so badly about it. I don't feel at all. Not until somebody opens the wound again.
Ken... I've a little proposition to make you.
No. Thanks, Miriam, but I'm not considering charity.
This isn't charity. I've a proposition to bring you back to life.
Really, Miriam?
You run along, Mary. I want to talk to Ken privately.
But, well, of course, you have perfect right to do whatever you like, Miriam, but do you think that...
Oh, I'm quite harmless, Larry.
I didn't mean that.
I'm sorry. You know, your pride gets a little sharp when you've nothing to be proud of.
Please, Larry, tell the rest of the crowd I couldn't make it, and don't tell them where I am. Don't say anything about who we saw. Promise?
I don't think this is wise at all, Miriam.
I didn't ask you what you thought. Well, promise?
All right. Good night, Ken.
Good night.
Miriam. I've been eating so furiously, I didn't even look at your apartment. Very neat.
Well, it's wonderful what a couple of bestseller books and a feature writer's job will do for a gal.
No, that's the best food I've had in months. It was nice of you. Now I'll be going along.
Just a minute. I said I had a proposition to make you.
I'm not taking money from anybody. That's what you mean.
Oh, don't be a fool. When I saw you on the street, I got a simply tremendous idea for a book. The title's Comeback. It's the story of a man who deteriorates to nothing and then is given every tool to make a comeback.
Very interesting.
It's going to be a personal case history with nothing held back. Of course, we won't use your name, but it's going to be a story of you.
A guinea pig for the laboratory? No, thanks.
Oh, now, don't be stuffy. You earn everything you get, and what you'll get will be a chance to come back to life.
Don't you think I got hurt enough before I died, Miriam? Without sticking pins into me again?
The apartment across the hall is vacant. I'll rent it tomorrow. We'll say you've been in South America, and you built a new fortune down there. You've just come back and are ready to start in business again.
No. No, I couldn't go through with it. You don't have enough money to...
I have enough money to give you a good front. That's all you'll need. You always had more brains than any man in our crowd. With the right front, you'll soon be making a great deal, just like you did before. If
I'm up to it.
Well, how about it?
Why? Well, give me a little time.
No. You'll get more and more scared. You're deciding right now.
All right. All right. I'll give it a try.
Miriam, you've got to stop this foolishness. You're riding for a terrible fall.
If I get cracked up, Larry, it'll be my funeral.
Everybody else is fooled. They think Ken Starr is wonderful. The man who came back, they're calling him. Well, I know he's the man who was brought back.
He's getting away with it beautifully.
But it can't last, Miriam. He doesn't have the stuff. He didn't have it when he went to trial for murder, and he's lost a lot since. An awful lot.
He's a wonderful person, Larry. Life gave him some mighty swift kicks in the pants, but he's the same sweet guy always was underneath. He's just as clever and charming, coming to the surface. And you've no idea what a thrill it is to me to see him grow.
Wait till he sees Elton a new husband. Watch him fall apart.
This is a big town, Larry. With a little handling, he doesn't need to see either Elsa or Harlan McGrath.
You're in love with Ken Starr, aren't you? Oh, you don't need to answer me. You're just as simple-minded about him as you were when he was carrying a torch for Elsa.
Well, what if I am?
I'm not going to see you throw your life away, Miriam. It isn't love, it's an old obsession. I think too much of you to let you wreck everything you have.
If Ken Starr would have me, I'd marry him tonight. I've always felt that way.
You're a writer and you're in love with drama. You can't tie yourself to a psychopathic case.
He's not a psychopathic case. He's...
All right, then arrange a dinner. Invite Ken and me. And also invite Elsa and Harlan McGrath.
No. He isn't ready.
Either you arrange that dinner or the show's all over.
You wouldn't.
You fool the rest of the town with your story about Ken getting back from South America. But you can't fool me. Remember? I was there. Either you have that dinner party or I'll blow your little game sky high.
Harlan had to stop off and talk to a business acquaintance for a few minutes before he could leave Ken. And anyway, I wanted to see you alone first. You're looking very handsome, Ken.
You're as lovely looking as ever, Elsa. You know, your voice still does things to me.
Oh, that's very flattering. Oh, I'm so glad to know you've done so well. But I've missed you, Ken.
I've never missed you, Elsa, because you've always been with me.
Well, you've improved at making pretty speeches.
Miss Harlan McGrath, this new husband of yours, did I ever know him?
No, he was after your time. Oh, he's a grand person. You'll like him a lot.
No, Elsa, I'm afraid I'm not that big.
Ken, please... You won't make a scene. I couldn't bear
it. Oh, you never could stand scenes, could you, Elsa? You'd always been shielded from unpleasantness of any kind till you married Bill Gaynor. Then you got a big dose of the wrong side of life and ran to me for protection.
Well, I suppose I should have testified at your trial, but I was so frightened. I never did believe you killed Bill, though.
Oh, it's very big of you, Elsa.
Maybe it was that I thought I knew who had killed him, and I was afraid to testify. I've always been such a coward.
What? You had evidence that you held back? Evidence that would have cleared me?
No, I'm not sure. Ken, don't look at me like that. You frighten me.
Well, oh, hello, Miriam, Larry.
You two have had long enough for yourselves. We decided to join the party.
From the look in your eye, Ken, I'd say Elsa still has that old black magic for you.
Larry.
We weren't talking about black magic, Larry. As a matter of fact, I was trying to get the dope on her husband.
Oh, you like him. Everybody likes Harlan. This time, I'm afraid there's no excuse for you to come dashing to Elsa's rescue, Ken. Oh, by the way, where is Harlan?
Well, there's no need to wait for him. He wasn't sure how long he'd be detained and said for us to go right ahead and start dinner.
But shouldn't we wait?
Nonsense. He won't mind a bit. And after all, you're supposed to be on time for dinner appointments.
Well, if you're sure it's all right.
Perfectly.
Well, then we might as well go into the dining room right now.
I've never been here for dinner before, Miriam. Which way?
Right down the hall, Elsa. I'll lead the way.
Here. Well, Harlan's already here. Harlan, why didn't you come into the living room?
Well, he's sitting at the table. There's something wrong.
Harlan? Harlan, what's the matter? Why don't you say something?
He's sick. Just a minute. Great Scott. He's dead.
What? Oh, no. No, that can't be.
Well, here we go again. I don't suppose there's a scratch on his right hand, is there?
Yes. Yes, there is.
It'll be filled with the deadly South American poison. Some detective will find some of it in my apartment. Somewhere. Excuse me. This is where I came in.
Ken, stop it. Get him away from that window. Ken, what do you think you're doing?
Oh, you let go of me. I'll jump, Miriam. Oh. I don't think I'm up to going through all this again.
Oh, Larry, help me.
Here. No. Ken. Sit down, Ken. I guess we'll have to call the police.
Detective Cedric Darnay has taken over and seems quite perplexed at what should be a simple case.
You are most helpful, Mr. Staff.
Sure, why not? I've been through all this before. It's a repeat performance. You'll find the poison in my apartment, just across the hall.
Where?
Well, I'm afraid I can't help you there, Darnay. You'll have to look around. But it'll be there. Don't you worry.
You are admitting that you killed Mr. McGrath?
Sure, why not?
No. He didn't do it, Mr. Darnay. He couldn't have done it.
No? Why not?
He was standing in the living room talking to Elsa McGrath when Larry Montag and I walked in. Elsa said her husband had been detained by a call on a business acquaintance.
I see. You think, then, there is no possibility of collusion between Mrs. McGrath and Mr. Starr?
Why, of course not.
You concur in that opinion, Mr. Montag?
Why, I guess so. To be honest about it, I wouldn't know.
That's ridiculous. Ken and I hadn't seen each other for 4 years till we met here. I'll swear to that.
Swearing to a statement does not impress me, Mrs. McGrath. You see, a murderer has already done something so much more serious than breaking an oath.
Oh, what's all the talk about? Why don't you put me under arrest and get it over with?
You think because of your previous unfortunate experience with Miss McGrath's first cousin, you will be in great trouble?
What do you think? No, Donnie. I know when I've been struck out. And whoever did it the first time is good enough to do it again.
Possibly. Mrs. McGrath, tell me, you're having trouble with your husband?
No, certainly not.
If you will pardon me, you do not seem to be greatly bereaved.
Harlan and I understood each other perfectly. Ours was no madly romantic love affair. But we were fond of each other and, well, it was a very satisfactory arrangement.
She isn't capable of any real feeling for anybody but herself. She let Ken Starr go through hell rather than be smeared in court.
Why, you little... And I thought you were my friend.
Nobody could be a friend of yours if it involved anything on your part. You're the most selfish woman that ever lived.
Oh, I am I?
I saw what you were up to when I came into the living room tonight. You'd thrown Ken to the wolves, but he came back alive. And when you saw him, you were planning how you could put him back on your shelf.
Really, Miriam?
Oh, don't give me the grand dame stuff. You never wanted him in the first place, but you never wanted anybody else to have him either.
You fool, what are you trying to do? Let this detective get us all into trouble? I ought to...
Oh, please, go right ahead. Don't mind me. I find it most interesting.
I'm sorry. I suppose I should be ashamed of myself.
I take it, Miss Shelby, you feel you are a far more suitable mate for Mr. Starr than Mrs. McGrath.
Why, how dare you talk like that?
I dare a great deal, Miss Shelby. You are afraid to put your emotions on display, hmm? Murder is the most primitive of all emotions.
Well, I guess I've made a fool of myself. All right. I'm in love with Ken Starr. And always have been.
What? Mr. Darnay, it seems that nobody's ever fallen for the right person around here. Elsa's first husband was in love with a chorus girl, and Ken Starr was in love with Elsa. Elsa was, well, in love with herself. And Miriam Shelby carried the torch for Ken. And I've been hanging around Miriam for 5 years, more or less, without results.
That is most helpful information, if correct, Mr. Montag.
Oh, it's correct, all right.
It opens most interesting avenues of conjecture.
Yeah? Like what?
For example, your unrequited love for Miss Shelby.
See here. Are you accusing me of murdering Harlan McGrath just to get Ken Starr out of the picture?
I make no accusations, Mr. Montag. I merely theorize.
I remember at the time of Bill Gaynor's death. Remember, I told you tonight, Ken. I had a feeling maybe I knew the murderer.
Based upon what?
Bill had said something about having to see Larry Montag and said he didn't know why Larry wanted to see him.
That's a lie. I had no appointment with Bill Gaynor. I never had a business appointment with him in my life or his. It's a fine time to be tossing in a thing like that. Over 4 years after his murder.
The mills of the gods grind slowly. Sometimes, Mr. Montag. As I recall, the same method was used for Mr. Gaynor's murder. Is that not correct?
Sure. Identical. Well, why don't you run across the hall to my apartment and find the poison? Here are my keys.
You are very bitter, Mr. Starr.
Bitter? Why wouldn't I be bitter?
Look, Mr. Darnay, I've been thinking. The dining room opens off the hall. You can come into it without going through the rest of the apartment.
Yes?
Larry could have made a business appointment with Harlan McGrath, met him, and scratched his hand with that poison. Then he could have brought him into the dining room, left him, and come up to the front entrance of the apartment.
Miriam, you don't know what you're saying.
Anyway, it won't stand up, Miriam.
Why not?
Nobody'd make the mistake twice of using his own name and setting a murder rendezvous. Elsa, was the appointment made at Harlan's office?
Yes, why?
Oh, $5 will get you 50. But the records will show his appointment was with me. You see, I've been through all this before. I know just what to expect.
You too, Miss Shelby. Sit down. I'm honored by having you visit my office.
Ken told me. You found the poison in the back of a dresser drawer in his apartment.
Yes. And the appointment was with Kenneth Starr, too. At least that name was used.
Your theorizing was right last night, Mr. Darnay. It must have been Larry Montag. It had to be. He planned all this to get Ken out of the way.
You seem more sure of yourself, Miss Shelby.
I've a good reason for being positive. It was Larry Montag who planned that dinner party. He said if I didn't have it, he'd tell the whole town how I picked Ken up out of the gutter and reclaimed him.
Why did you not tell me this before?
I didn't realize how important it was.
It seems to be the one thing I needed. It doesn't stand to reason that a man who narrowly escaped conviction of one murder would commit a second murder in the identical manner, and plant clues against himself all over the place.
Then you'll put Larry under arrest?
Yes, immediately.
Why, hello, Ken. Won't you come in?
Elsa. Yes, you've heard about Larry Montag?
They've arrested him, haven't they? Poor fellow.
Well, things are different this time, Elsa.
What do you mean?
Well, this time I'm not mixed up in it. We can get married now, can't we?
You rather startle me, Ken.
Well, there's nothing new about the idea, Elsa.
But you've been away for more than 4 years. I hardly know you anymore.
But some ways I haven't changed, Elsa. I'm still just as madly in love with you as I ever was. You still mean more to me than anyone else in the world.
Ken, I'm all mixed up on some things. This job of yours in South America that everybody said was so tremendous. Then, while the detective was there, Larry said something about Miriam having picked you up when you were down and out.
What difference does it make?
Well, it makes a good deal of difference.
It better not, Elsa.
Don't look at me like that, Ken. After all, I'm used to nice things. I have expensive tastes. I need a husband who has a good deal of money.
Oh, I'll get money all right.
Oh, you'll get it. But you don't have it, is that the point?
Look, Elsa, we're wasting time. We've wasted years. Let's go get married right now.
I'm not at all sure that I want to marry you.
Oh, I guess Miriam and Larry were right about you. The only person you're in love with is yourself.
See here, Ken Starr, you can't talk to me like that. I'll thank you to get right out of this house.
Oh, you will, huh?
And hurry up about it.
You've got a lot of nerve ordering me out of your house after all the hell you've sent me through.
I had nothing to do with your being arrested.
You poor fool. You almost sent me to the electric chair. That telephone call to Bill Gaynor from Larry Montag was the important part of the whole setup. And you never came forward and told about it.
What do you mean?
I arranged things so it would look like somebody had planted evidence against me, tried to frame me. Then I called for the appointment and said I was Larry Montag.
You said you were Larry Montag?
Of course. That was to be where his perfect crime broke down, you see. All the evidence pointing toward me. But then that telephone call was to trip him up. And you didn't have the decency to step forward with the call. I couldn't ask about it because I wasn't supposed to know.
Then you really did kill Bill Gaynor. You're a murderer.
Yes, I killed him for you. You wanted it done, didn't you? You said you wanted to marry me, that you couldn't stand living under the same roof with him. You made a bargain,
Elsa. You thought I actually wanted you to commit murder?
You did want me to do it. You said you'd marry me in a minute if anything ever happened to Bill. Well, something happened to him, all right. And you welched on your deal.
You killed him.
We had a contract. And we're going to keep that contract if I have to kill every man who ever looks at you.
You killed Harlan, too.
Yeah, it was almost too simple. I didn't cover up a thing. I deliberately set all the evidence against me. I used my right name when I called Harlan McGrath for an appointment. Said I wanted to talk to him about the death of your first husband. I didn't even bother about hiding the poison. I didn't even deny killing him. And nobody believed me.
You won't get away with it. You'll go to jail. You'll be sentenced to death.
You think you can scare me with death, Elsa? You think you can scare me with death? A man who's already been through it? No. I've nothing to lose, Elsa. I can risk anything to get back the life you can give me.
You're insane. I wouldn't marry you if you were the last man on earth.
You'll marry me or you don't ever marry anybody, Elsa.
Put down that gun. You couldn't shoot me. You're too...
I would not try to shoot if I were you, Mr. Starr.
We're just having a little argument.
I heard the argument. The whole thing. You were a most clever killer, Mr. Starr. Allow me to congratulate you on the extreme subtlety of your methods. So subtle that they seemed almost impossible.
Thanks, Donnie.
You overlooked only one thing.
Oh? What's that?
The obvious motive. Twice this lady's husbands were murdered, and each time you were in love with her.
But you arrested Larry Montag. I fooled you enough for that.
No. I arrested him because you had not spoken to the charming lady about marriage. You were afraid, and I arrested Montag to give you security.
You're pretty clever yourself, Donnie.
Thank you. I consider that a compliment from an expert. And now, if you will come with me to the police station...
Just a second. If you'll pardon me, there's one thing I have to do first.
No! Ken, you shot me.
I'm ready now, Donnie. Here's my gun.
You realize that this brutal murder of Mrs. McGrath will inevitably mean the electric chair for you?
But I'm not afraid. Nothing to lose. Remember, this is where I came in. Well, Bobby, what's the story for next week?
It's a story about a newspaper reporter who gets fired from his job and plots a horrible murder as a result of it.
Hmm. Story about being fired, huh?
It's a fast-moving story of revenge and how a hate-inspired mind works. There's all the excitement and glamour of the newsroom, plus a murder puzzle that'll keep you on your toes right up to the final word.
Well, it sounds like one of your four-star specials. What's the title?
It's called Death at Deadline.
Mystery House on Tuned To Yesterday from August 19th, 1945 on the Mutual Broadcasting System coming out of WGN in Chicago. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned To Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now we join the precursor to Richard Diamond Private Detective. It's Rogues Gallery, starring Dick Powell. In its first year, already attracting about 4 million listeners Thursday nights at 8:30. We hear a broadcast now from June 6th, 1946 on Mutual.
Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
While for a while, let it fall to your style, you stitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, you stitch shampoo.
The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. Call me a silly, impressionable boy if you want to. But when I first laid eyes on Patricia Flynn at that party, I was over the side like a Jacob's ladder. Her hair was as black as a lover's despair. Her eyes were the blue of the washed sky around a rainbow. And she was to feminine architecture what the atom bomb is to science. Ah, there's never been anything like it. I liked her, and she liked me. In fact, she seemed to be spending most of the evening trying to be alone with me. But another lovely, bless her, outmaneuvered her. The next day, I went to my office a little late. I was just sitting there at my desk trying to make my checkbook agree with the bank's theories when the door opened. And who walked in was Patricia. I restrained a foolish impulse to grab her and shout, "I love you," by looking bored and saying, "Hello."
"Hello, Mr. Rogue. I guess I should have called for an appointment."
"Oh, now look, first off, you must call me Richard, because I'm going to call you Pat. I'm so glad you came in to see me, Pat. Let's go down to the hunt room and talk things over, shall we?"
"After a while, if you want to. It sounds charming, but I wanted to talk to you here alone first."
"Oh? Oh, well, okay. What should we talk about?"
"Mr. Rowe, Richard."
"Thank you."
"I know this sounds dramatic, but there have been two attempts made on my life in the past 3 weeks."
"Well, why would anybody want to harm you?"
"I don't know. I really don't. There's no reason that I can think of."
Well, you poor kid. Where did these attempts on your life take place?"
"At our summer place, up on Lake Tecumseh."
"Oh, and there's nobody up there with any motive for wanting you out of the way?"
"Nobody." "I don't know whether you've ever been to Lake Tecumseh or not. It's a small resort, just a few families have cabins there."
"Pat, maybe you'd better start from the beginning. You know, I don't really know much about you. Give me the whole story, will you?"
"All right. You already know my name. It's Pat Flynn. My father was Michael Flynn, the attorney."
"Yes, I knew of him, of course."
"Mother was much younger than Dad. About a year after he died, she married Herbert Lewis, the British artist. He was a widower. He had a daughter, Diane, just my age. She's a lovely girl. Very British, English, finishing school. And a wonderful musical education. We're the best of friends. She got married about 3 months ago to John Anderson, a boy I've known since he was about 10. They're very happy, and we're all up the lake together."
"All staying in the same cottage?"
"Yes. Well, it isn't exactly a cottage. We all call it that, but it's really rather a large house."
"Okay. Now, tell me about the attempts on your life. How'd they happen?"
"Well, about 3 weeks ago, I got up earlier than the rest of the family. I often do. I went down to the lake for a dip. I'm a pretty good swimmer, and I headed right out to the island in the middle of the lake. I heard a bullet whistle past my head. I dove underwater and swam back toward the shore as long as I could hold my breath. Then I came up. I heard another bullet hit the water not a foot from me. I was frightened to death. I stayed underwater as much as I could until I saw Mother and John coming down for their morning dip. And I swam in and joined them.
Did you tell them about it?
No. I was afraid they'd laugh at me.
Uh-huh. There was another attempt later?
Yes. I always have a glass of milk in my room at night. And one night, for no reason at all, I gave it to my cat, Cynthia. And Cynthia died. She had convulsions and died. The veterinary said she'd been poisoned. Somebody tried to poison me.
Look, baby, I think it's about time you're telling somebody about this. There's no future in being murdered, you know. That poisoned milk makes it look like an inside job, doesn't it?
I don't see how it could be anyone in the house, Mr. Rogue. There's only the family and...
No servants?
Only Mary, the cook. And... Oh, well, she's like a mother. She wouldn't want to hurt me. Oh, Richard, I'm scared. I'm supposed to go back up to the lake tomorrow. And I know that the next time, they're going to succeed in killing me.
What do you want me to do?
I want you to come up with me as a house guest. No one will know you're an investigator. And Mr. Rowe.
Yes, Pat?
You can protect me.
I couldn't understand why anybody would want to deprive this ugly old world of Patricia Flynn's beauty. But she was convinced that somebody was trying to promote her to a better land than this, so I accepted her invitation to be a house guest at her family's 18-room cabin on Lake Tecumseh. I'd like to be Uncle Tom in a cabin like that. The living room was a little smaller than the Los Angeles Union Station, but it was much more comfortable. There was a fireplace at each end of it about the size of the entrance to the Hudson Tube. And the room was done in rustic furniture with down cushions. Every place you looked at the walls, you either got an inquisitive look from a defunct moose or a cold stare from a mounted fish. Ah, if this was roughing it, I gave up my scouting too early. The first evening, I sat around and talked with Pat's mother, who looked 30, and her stepsister, Diane, who looked dandy, and John Anderson, who looked like John Anderson. John was Diane's husband.
We're so happy that you could come up with Patricia, Mr. Rogue. She hasn't been enjoying herself this summer for some reason.
She seems so depressed.
Well, girls with her looks should never be depressed.
If I weren't Patricia's mother, I'd think she was in love. She has all the symptoms.
Are you the cause of all this, Rogue?
Well, I hope so, but I doubt it. It's an interesting thought.
Where is Pat?
She went out for a walk. Down around the lake, I suppose.
Oh, well, perhaps we're keeping you, Mr. Rogue. The moon's shining, you know. Very romantic out by the lake.
Oh, I think if she had wanted me to go with her, she would have asked me.
You don't know women, Mr. Rogue. They're very subtle.
It's really a lovely night.
Come on, Diane. Let's take a walk and show Mr. Rogue around the place a little bit, huh?
No, you and Mr. Rogue go ahead, John. I'm going to stay in tonight. I've had the sniffles all day. I don't think I should be out in the night air.
You'd better slip a coat on over your sweater if you go out, Mr. Rogue. Gets pretty chilly up here nights.
Well, how about it, Rogue? Shall we take a look around?
Oh, yes. Certainly, I'd like to take a look around this place. Sure I'm not putting you out?
Oh, not at all. I usually take a stroll before turning in. Come on.
Okay, if you ladies will excuse us.
Of course.
I'll see you at breakfast, Mr. Rogue. I'll probably retire before you return. It's so nice having you here.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
We live very quietly here on the lake, Rogue. I'm afraid you might find it a little dull.
Oh, I could use a little quiet.
Have you known Pat long?
Hmm? Oh, well, quite a while. She's a grand girl, isn't she?
Oh, one of the best. Strange kid, though.
I think she's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. She has something on her mind lately, though. Doesn't seem to be quite her old carefree self.
You've noticed it, too, huh? Well, she was very close to her father, you know. Hasn't been too sharp since his death. I'm kind of worried about her.
You think that's what she's brooding about? Her father's death?
I can't figure her lately. She's changed completely. Yeah, look at her down there by the side of the lake. All alone, as usual.
Hmm. Suppose she would resent it if we joined her?
Well, we can try and see. Hey, Pat, you receiving callers this evening?
I'm waiting for them. Come on over.
Well, you look mighty beautiful sitting out there in the moonlight.
That remark has my enthusiastic approval. Aren't you cold out here with no wrap, Patty?
No, it's nice out here. I like the breeze. Have a seat on the sand, Mr. Rhodes.
Well, thanks. Oh, brother, this is the life. Brings out the Davy Crockett in me. Tell me, does the place come equipped with a canoe?
Canoe, speedboat, rowboat, take your choice.
Personally, I prefer the speedboat.
Leaves both hands free.
You and your elephant's memory.
John used to make mad love to me out there on that lake, Mr. Rogue. Before he was married, of course.
Yeah, well, that was puppy love. Pat soon tired of me.
Mm.
What's the program for tomorrow, Pat?
Want to go riding?
Sure.
6 o'clock, then, at the stables.
6 o'clock in the morning? Will the horses be awake?
No, they go to bed early.
What are you looking for, Rogue?
Oh, my cigarettes. I guess I left them in my coat. Can you spare one?
I didn't bring any with me. Did you, Pat?
You know I don't smoke.
Well, I'm an awful slave. Looks like I'm going to have to go get them. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay, we'll be here.
I didn't know Handsome John well enough to call him a liar. But I did know he had cigarettes in his pocket. It was hard for me to believe that a guy living in all that luxury would begrudge a house guest a cigarette for financial reasons. So I had to assume that he wanted to be alone with Pat. I felt as unnecessary as a laugh at a funeral as I walked back up to the house. The French doors into the living room were open and I headed for them. I wasn't making any noise, walking in the sand. And I stopped in embarrassment when I heard the conversation which was in progress in the room between Diane and Patricia's mother.
I tell you, I'm not going to put up with this much longer. The way Pat throws herself at John is sickening.
John's old enough to take care of himself, I believe, Diane.
She's doing everything she can to cause trouble between John and me. Everything. She hates me for marrying John.
Yes, I believe she's still in love with John. She always has been. And if she hadn't been away at school when you met John and married him...
Please, don't you dare say that again. Ever.
It's the truth. If it hadn't been for you, John and Pat would be married, as they always planned to be.
If she doesn't leave John alone, something terrible is going to happen to her. I love John. He's mine. You hate me. You hate me for marrying John.
No, I don't hate you, Diane. But I'm her mother. I want my daughter to be happy again. And I'll do anything to bring her happiness back to her.
You can't take John away from me. I'm going to have a talk with him now. We're leaving here in the morning.
When Diane left that room, you could feel the hate radiating from her like heat from a depot stove. She walked directly toward the spot where I was standing, and I ducked back into the shrubbery. I followed her as she headed for the couple on the beach, and I was only a few feet behind her when she stopped. Pat and John were knee-deep in a conversation that was a tone lower than the last note of A Sleep in the Deep. Diane listened. So did I.
We have to do something about this, John. We can't go on this way. If you don't tell her you want a divorce, I'll...
I don't want a divorce, Pat. Now, that's final. I'm not going to let the fact that you fancy yourself in love with me ruin my whole life.
Make it over tonight, darling. Meet me on the island at 6 tomorrow morning. You'd better go in.
All right. I'll meet you in the morning, Pat, but...
Go in, John. I love you.
This group of lovely people was as full of potential drama as a little theater on opening night. I followed Diane back into the house, walked noisily in the front door, and said goodnight. I thought I heard somebody enter and leave my room while I was under the shower, but there was nothing much I could do about it. The room was empty when I re-entered it, and I helped myself to a drink of water from the thermos on the night table. The water tasted funny. As I hit the pillow, I knew what it was. I went out like a match in a bucket of water. And when I opened my eyes, I was on cloud 8. Ugor was looking me over, and that little dame was there.
He's opening his eyes, Ugor.
Hey, Chiefy, what happened? No bump on your head.
Oh, never mind.
What's that girl doing here?
Tell him, Hugo. Ask him now.
If you're going to ask me for permission to get married, the answer is no.
Yeah, but, Chiefy, don't you think it's about time you and I settle down? Don't you get tired of getting hit on the head?
Look, Hugo. You've got all you can do to take care of your job as my alter ego without taking on any more responsibilities.
But, Mr. Rogue, I won't be any trouble. I can...
Honey, now look, Rogie. I ask you man to man.
Man to man? Anything you ask me is spook to man, Ugor. You're nothing but a figment of my imagination.
What did that mean?
Now, look, Chiefy, this is no time to be making a decision which will affect the entire lives of three people. You're not clear in the head.
Did it ever occur to you that if I was clear in my head, I wouldn't be here on Cloud 8 talking to you and that Lilliputian Lana Turner? This Cloud 8 is strictly non-coeducational. Now, you throw her out of here.
Push him over the side, Hugo.
Oh, no. No. No, I have to rest a while. Go away.
Come on, Hugo. Help me. He's mean.
All right. Over you go, Chiefy.
No. No. Cut it out. Ooh, I'll strangle you with your own beard, Hugo. Stop pushing.
He's a bad man, Hugo.
Yes, he is. So long, Rogie.
When I woke up, the sun was high in the heavens. My head felt like a busy blacksmith's anvil, and my tongue was made of mink. I leaped out of bed like a startled fawn, and I sat back down fast. I dressed without lowering my head and made a belated appearance at the breakfast table. Pat and her mother were having breakfast. John came in a few minutes after me. He didn't look well either.
Good morning, John. Where's Diane?
I don't know. We had a bit of a disagreement last night. She slept in the guest room, and I just looked in. She wasn't there.
She probably went for a morning dip.
Oh. Have you been in yet this morning, Pat?
Not me. I slept. I couldn't wake up this morning.
Whatever happened to our horseback ride, Pat?
Oh, did you get up for it?
Oh, me? Oh, no. No, I slept right straight through. As a matter of fact, I never slept so well in my life.
Yeah, that goes for me, too. And I feel terrible this morning.
Well, so do I. I feel dopey.
How about a canoe ride after breakfast, Pat? It'll do us both good.
Maybe that's what I need.
Do I look as stupid as I feel?
I don't know what you mean. You look kind of sleepy. You look like I feel.
Somebody doped me last night, Pat.
They did. Are you sure?
Honey, I know when I'd been slipped a tricky Mickey. Last night was one of those times. Who would have wanted me out of the way last night?
I don't know. I'm sure somebody doped me last night, too, Richard. It's almost as if some crazy person were hiding there. Maybe we should call the police.
Look, chicken, that stepsister of yours is kind of burned with you.
Diane?
Now, don't look so surprised. You know it. I happened to overhear a little conversation between Diane and your mother last night. Diane lifted your boyfriend, didn't she?
Yes.
You're asking for trouble, Pat, fighting back like that. I really... Hey.
What's the matter?
What's that over there?
Oh. Oh, Richard.
Don't look.
It's Diane, isn't it?
Yes.
That's my white bathing suit. She's wearing my bathing suit.
She's dead, Pat. Somebody shot her.
Oh, no. Richard. Whoever shot her thought they were shooting me.
Well, Pat Flynn had proved her point. Her half-sister, Diane, was lying there on the beach, dead. Shot while swimming in Lake Tecumseh, wearing Pat's white satin swimsuit. I stood over Diane's body while Pat ran screaming hysterically up to the house to get John.
They were back in a few minutes, and the three of us stood looking down at the dead girl.
Oh, darling.
Here, John, take it easy, old man.
Let go of me, Rogue. Let go of me.
I know how you feel, John.
Oh, you know how I feel. Have you ever loved anybody so much you couldn't get your breath? And then had them murdered? You know how I feel. How could you know?
John, please.
Get away from me, Pat. Do you hear? This is all your fault. If you hadn't been such a stupid little fool, she wouldn't be dead.
Now, take it easy, John. You don't know what you're saying.
How can you blame me, John? Whoever killed her thought they were shooting me.
I wish they had. You were the cause of all the trouble. You've hated her ever since we were married. You think she stole me from you. How could you think that? You were never anything to me.
Now, look. We'd better get up to the house. The police have to be called. This is murder, you know.
You take care of that, will you, Rogue?
Of course. You better come with me, John.
No. I'll stay here with Diane. But take Pat with you. Don't leave her out here with me. With us.
I'll go, John. I wish you wouldn't hate me. John.
Get back to the house.
Come on, Pat.
And when the police get here, Rogue, I have something to tell them. Bring them right out here to me.
All right. All right, John. Oh, this is a horrible thing, Pat. Tell me, how did your mother react to the news of her stepdaughter's murder?
She didn't say anything. She just said, "Oh, Richard, if you don't think mother..."
I don't know. It looks like everybody in the house was dope last night but your mother.
Oh, couldn't have been mother. She wouldn't want to hurt me.
You're overlooking the fact that whoever shot Diane might have known just who was wearing that white bathing suit, aren't you?
Oh, no. It couldn't have been Mother. It was someone trying to kill me.
That's just a theory. Go call the police. Tell them to come up here. I'm going to have a talk with your mother. As soon as Pat was out of the way, I ran up the stairs to my room. I took the stopper out of the thermos and sniffed the water in it. There had been chloral in that water. I knew the pungent smell of it. I visited Pat's bedroom and John's and sampled the odor of the water at their bedsides. It was a very interesting experiment. I headed for the bedroom occupied by Pat's mother and hesitated outside the door. There was the odor of burning cloth. I opened the door and walked in. She was on her knees in front of the fireplace, trying to burn a scanty red swimsuit, a damp one.
What do you mean, coming into my bedroom, Mr. Rogue?
Your stepdaughter, Diane, has been murdered, and I'm investigating the circumstances. Give me that bathing suit. Give it here.
No, I won't.
I'm sorry. I'll have to take it, then. You know, destroying evidence is bad business. Give it here.
I killed her. I killed Diane, Mr. Rogue.
You did? Why?
She was ruining my daughter's life. I killed her this morning.
Where does the bathing suit enter into it? Why were you trying to destroy it?
I didn't want the police to know that I'd been in the lake this morning.
Oh, I see. Well?
The police are... Mother, what are you doing with that swimsuit?
Pat, I've...
Whose is it?
It was Diane's.
You might as well face it, Pat. Your mother killed Diane. She just confessed to me. He was burning that suit to keep the police from finding out that she'd been in swimming this morning.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Look at that suit. Look at the size of it. Mother could no more get into that than
Pat.
She...
No. No, she couldn't, could she? But you could, Pat. And if I'm not...
I did it. I killed her. Pat, don't say anything.
The water on my nightstand was drugged last night, Pat. Chloral. So was John's. But yours wasn't. And you shot Diane, didn't you?
No. Pat, don't answer him. I shot her. I hated her.
She was no good, Mother. I did it. I killed her. I saw her sneaking around listening to what John and I were saying last night. Spying on us. I gave her something to listen to. I made a date to meet John on the island at 6 o'clock this morning. I knew what she'd do. I knew. Oh, Pat. Pat, how could you do it? I'm glad I did it. If I can't have John, I'd just as soon be dead. I'm only sorry I wasn't a little more clever.
Pat, dear, we'll get the best attorney.
No. Not for me. Oh, bless your heart. That was a wonderful try you made for me. Bobby, I love you.
The police arrived a few minutes later, and Pat told them everything. Her diary was admitted as evidence at her trial. Every day since the marriage of John and Diane, Pat had planned Diane's death. The phony attempts on her life that she told me about were part of the buildup. There could be no doubt about the fact that Pat's mind had given away under the deadly poison of jealousy and hate. She was found not guilty by reason of insanity and was committed to an institution. All on account of jealousy. Oh, well, jealousy is a very strange thing. You drive yourself daffy trying to prove something that you hope isn't true. Because if it is, you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to convince yourself that it wasn't important anyway. You know what I mean. This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed.
Rogues Gallery on Tuned to Yesterday from June 6th, 1946 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.